This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. For anyone who loves a dark, starry night sky, staying away from big cities is maybe a given. And while light pollution is the worst in urban areas, our next guest discovered something surprising when he mapped our light sources in the United States while adjusting for population. He found that many rural areas are actually getting a larger share of light pollution per person, something he ties to a busy decade of development outside of urban centers. Tim Wallace is a cartographer at Descartes Labs. He also got his PhD from UW-Madison. Tim, thanks for joining us.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
When people think of light pollution, they might think of the big cities. You took a kind of a different look. How did you put this map together with our light sort of per capita?
Sure. Yeah. So I live in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and I do a lot of driving to remote areas, and sometimes I see more light than I would expect. And so I had this idea that I could take two different data sets, one that was a population data set and one that is a luminance at night, a nighttime lights data set, and sort of subtract the population from the light. And the result showed off a lot of sort of surprising patterns.
Yeah, hit us with some of those surprises you found when you put those two things together.
Well, so one of them is, I think that they're referred to as fulfillment centers. They're sort of these, they're in exurbs or sometimes in rural areas outside of cities. And there are places where, you know, there's an Amazon fulfillment center or there's some kind of shipping hub. And there's these giant buildings. If you look at them in satellite imagery, some of them are like as big as a mile long. And of course, you know, people don't live there, so they don't show up in the population data set, but they do kick off a lot of light, so they'll show up. They'll show up at night. Some of the other ones were like there's one spot in Maine where you can see a tomato greenhouse complex, which is like was really surprising to me. I have family in Maine, and I did not know there was a massive tomato greenhouse complex there.
And there was a huge bright spot looking at your map in North Dakota. What's going on there?
Oh, so that is oil and gas activity. When you frack, you often have to burn off the gas that is leaking out of the ground. And so some of it, I imagine, is actual the flaring of, you know, burning methane. And some of it is probably, you know, from the infrastructure related to oil and gas.
And we don't have those huge fracking projects here in Wisconsin. Did you happen to notice anything that stood out for you in our neck of the woods?
Well, so Fort McCoy, the fort,
sure,
popped out because I suspect there is no official census information about military locations. Also malls and again those fulfillment centers. There was one spot in particular that was where there was I got distracted by candy because there's like a Jelly Belly, either factory or like tour place.
Yeah,
outside of I think Kenosha, and that whole area just really popped because there's a lot of activity there. There's a lot of industry, but there aren't any people living there.
Now, working as a cartographer, people I don't think maybe necessarily think of the sort of creativity that might go into something like this. How do you try to come up with the ideas like this, putting together two different things to see what stands out when we look at things from a different point of view?
Sure. So I spent years at the New York Times on the graphics desk making maps, and most of the maps that I made there were very purposeful around politics or global conflict, or some kind of disaster. But I did. I went to the University of Wisconsin and came through the cartography lab there where you're encouraged to experiment. And so I've always had kind of playful ideas in my head floating around. And this idea of normalizing something, adjusting something by population is not uncommon in cartography. It's what you do with a lot of maps. It's what we do with political maps, with election results maps. They show the margin of victory. They don't show the total number of people who voted because it's easier to read. And with something like a nighttime lights image, it's not maybe intuitive to normalize it by people, but because a nighttime lights image at first glance looks almost identical to a population map, I thought it would be a good thing to look at to see what those little differences were.
Speaking of the New York Times, you recently worked on a project that mapped the development in ex-urban areas, so out, not the big cities, not the denser suburbs, over the last 10 years. And this definitely feeds into this light story, too. And you did these before and after satellite views of a lot of these areas. What struck you about the kind of changes and the pace of change we see?
Well, so much struck me about what has changed. But again, back to those fulfillment centers, that was one that really popped. That they really, I think, you know, as the internet has matured and e-commerce has gotten stronger and stronger, this type of infrastructure has just really blown up. So a lot of our sort of national map of change over the last 10 years, a lot of it were those types of developments. But also, as you mentioned, the exurbs, it's not necessarily change we're seeing in a city where maybe the city is growing, but it might be growing up, so we wouldn't be able to see it with satellite imagery quite as well. It's sort of the sprawl around cities, especially in the Midwest and in the West, where there's a little bit more area to spread out.
And you did these before and after that are, you know, maybe 5 or 10 years apart. And it made me think of, you know, living in a place where you see, oh, that got built. Or if it's a big thing, you see the construction project. So it seems gradual, you know, versus maybe going back to your hometown after 20 years and everything's changed. There's this huge story of a changing landscape here that we're kind of too close to see without taking this step back.
It's true. You don't necessarily notice these things when you watch them happen slowly over the course of a decade. But like, honestly, if I came back to Madison right now, because it's been quite a few years, I probably would notice those changes the same way I would in this, you know, satellite analysis. It's a fun thing to take to, you know, the beginning and an end that are that far apart and look at, you know, substantial change.
Tim, any other project you're curious to try to map in the future?
Oh, I'm constantly mapping stuff I'm curious about. I work at Descartes Labs now in Santa Fe, New Mexico. We're a geospatial analytics company, and I have the distinct pleasure of being the creative lead here. And what that means is I get to experiment. And so along with my colleague, Krishna Kara, I am literally every week doing something I'm pretty sure no one has ever done before. So we're mapping things that that we couldn't before because the technology didn't exist. We couldn't crunch that much data, or we weren't able to get all those data sets together in one place. And it's fun. And so I try to share it as much as possible.
Tim, thanks so much for sharing it with us today.
Thank you.
Tim Wallace is a cartographer at Descartes Labs in New Mexico and a PhD graduate from UW-Madison. He talked to us about his map showing that light pollution is a growing issue in rural areas. You can see that map at WPR.org/centraltime.